It all goes back to Labor Day 2012. I knew I was going to get med boarded. I knew they were going to put me out, but I didn't know when. Then they called me in the office and said, we need your ID. And Sergeant Kaufman, you're no longer a member of the United States military. And when they took my ID from my hand, so who was I now? I don't have that anymore. And I knew when I got home, I was going to hang up that uniform for the last time. It was going to go in a closet and I'm never going to wear it again. So I felt like I failed my wife. I failed my country. I failed myself. And I was like, you know what? I'm still on orders for the rest of the weekend. So if I die, my wife gets $100,000 or whatever it is. You know, she'll be taken care of because I had a brand new 6-month-old daughter. I have 2 sons. And I figured if I die today while on orders, they'll be taken care of.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Richard Kaufman, who has personally come back from drug addiction, alcohol, homelessness, blindness, and a traumatic brain injury. Now he has a top 0.5% globally ranked podcast. He's the author of a 2-time top selling book and is an in-demand resiliency speaker. Richard and I actually connected, oh goodness, I want to say it was a year, maybe over a year ago, and I was on his podcast. And I'm just so impressed, Richard, with everything that you have been doing in your space, in your growth, and I see you everywhere online. And it's so incredible to just see how you have evolved as a person. So I am so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. Guys, I want to apologize. I got to wear these goofy glasses. I only got 40% of my vision, so I got to use these stupid glasses. So I do apologize.
It's all good. You know, we use audio for most of the podcast, and I just use video for marketing here and there. So I think the glasses look great.
I'll go with that.
So, Richard, tell us a little bit more about you. I know your bio is just a tiny snippet of everything that you're doing in your life. So tell the listeners more.
All right. I'll give you a quick down and dirty, and then we can talk about whatever you want. My father left when I was 3 months old. My mother became an active addict, moved around a lot, 15 places in 13 years. Had my first drink at 11, full-blown alcoholic by the age of 13. Got thrown out of school for hitting a teacher in the head with a desk. Don't do that, guys. That's frowned upon. Joined the military because it was either military or jail. I actually did both when I joined the military. I did 2.5 years, got thrown out for being a drug addict. Alcoholic. And then I got out. I became a really bad alcoholic and drug addict. I was looking at 5 years prison time for robbing a police officer. And that was pretty stupid. But he gave me a choice. He said, you can either go to jail or you can go to 30 meetings of AA. So I had 300 meetings in a row. I haven't had a drink since 1988. So I've been sober going on 35 years now. Got back in the military, got in a lot of trouble again, not for being an alcoholic or drug addict, just for being an asshole. But because of what happened on that Tuesday morning at 8:48 on September 11, 2001, my whole life changed in that one split second. And I was due to be thrown out at the end of September 2001, but because of what happened, and we could talk about that later, that's when my life changed. My life changed at 8:49 on September 11, 2001. The military decided to keep me. I became Soldier of the Year. I became non-commissioned officer. Served 23 years. Then I got blinded by a training accident. I lost 80% of my vision. And they medically discharged me Labor Day 2012. And that was the day that I attempted suicide. But my 6-month-old daughter saved my life. We'll probably talk about that later. But then, because I don't know, you know, when you when you're getting med boarded out of the military, sometimes you got to sit in a room for a couple months or a couple weeks, whatever. But I heard of a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, and I got really interested in to find out what he was talking about. So I actually got the chance to go to lunch with Gary Vaynerchuk. And he's the one that started me on my podcast journey. He's the one that named me the comeback coach. He's the one that told me to write my book. So it wasn't for Gary, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And now that's what I do now. I have a top podcast, book, and all that stuff. But my goal is just for somebody that's listening right now to let them know that your past doesn't dictate your future. That what you do in this moment is where you're going to be 5 years from now. So that's why I love this podcast, because I love how it talks about is you define your future. And nobody else defines your future, not your wife, your husband, your kids. You define your future. So that's a little bit about me. And now we can go wherever you want to go.
Awesome. Well, thank you. That was an incredible overview. And I'm sitting here taking notes in my head of, oh, I want to dive into that. And I want to dive into that. But I think the first thing that I want to dive a little bit deeper into is you talked about how on 9/11, the military decided to keep you. And that was a massive turning point in your journey. So tell us a little bit more about that specific experience.
Well, where I'm sitting right now, if I go stand on my front porch, I'm actually standing in the shadows where the Twin Towers once stood. So I'm literally 7 minutes from Manhattan. And we knew people that were in the buildings that day. We knew people that worked in the Pentagon. And when it was happening, because 8:48 is when the first plane actually hit, it was all live. There was no editing. You know, when you're watching it on TV, you can hear the bodies hit the floor. You can hear all the crashes. You can see them pulling the bodies out of the Pentagon. And as I'm watching it on my big screen TV, all my TA-50 is right next to the TV, because I got to turn my shit in because I'm being thrown out for the second time. And that's when it came to me. And I wrote about that in my book. I literally broke down in my couch and cried out. I said, Lord, you know, these people went to work. All they were doing was going to work. They're not coming home. You know, so that's what I decided. You know what, Lord, for the last 27 years, I've been living my life for me. Now I want to live my life to help protect those that can't help themselves. And that's when my life changed, literally from 8:49 that morning. My whole life has been about change, helping other people change, and helping people realize that it's okay not to be okay. And if you're not strong enough to take the arrows, I'll take the arrows for you until you're strong enough to go on your own. So that's what my whole life has been since 8:49 of September 11, 2001.
And so you also mentioned that you hit a pretty low point where you attempted suicide as well. Now, it sounds like when you were serving in the military, take us back to that. It sounds like things were pretty good. I mean, you stayed in a decent amount of time before you essentially got medically discharged from the military. So talk to us about that second go around in the military. What was that experience like for you? And then we can kind of get into that suicide attempt part. But I want to learn a little bit more about why it is that you stayed in for so long in the military.
Well, what happened was the day that I was about to be locked up for robbing a police officer, my uncle bailed me out. But now my uncle was somebody I really respected. He was in the Korean War. He was the boxing champion of the United States Army. He only had like a fourth grade education. So it was somebody that I really respected, and he died as a multi-millionaire. But somebody I really respected. But as he was bailing me out, he said, you know what? I know you didn't have what it took to be a military man. And it ate at me and it bugged me. I couldn't sleep at night for months. That's when I decided to try to get back in the military. And I'm probably one of the only people you'll ever know that gets thrown out for being an addict and gets back in. But, you know, I had an attitude problem because, you know, I'm here. I'm from the North. I'm from Jersey. And I joined the South Carolina National Guard. And these are all good old boys. And, you know, I got that Northern accent and I got the attitude problem. And they're like, wait a minute, Yankee, you know, just sit down and shut up. And that didn't go too well. So I made myself not fit in. And one thing I want your listeners to know is anything that's ever happened to me, It's all my fault. I accept everything that's ever happened to me. I take responsibility for every bit of it. Nobody's ever done anything to me like my mentor, Ed Milet, told me when we talked, Rich, nothing ever happens to you. It all happens for you. So whatever happened in my life, it was all my fault. But anyway, I get back in and I'm not taking it seriously again. I mean, I'm probably the only guy you're ever going to know that got 8 Article 15s, 2 field grades, 2 field grades. But then after the morning of 9/11, I called my company commander and I said, you know, I want to come and talk to you. And they said, yeah, you know, we've heard it all before. But when I went in their office and I broke down and cried in front of him and the first sergeant, they knew, they seen something different in me. So they actually fought for me. And I'm still friends with both of them all these years. But at that moment, that's when I realized, because I had drill the next weekend, whatever the next weekend was, I had drill. So I realized I had to do something different. I had to do, what I was doing wasn't working. So I actually got to drill 2 hours early. I stayed 2 hours late. Every drill I stayed, got there 2 hours early, stayed 2 hours late. And I started to see what the successful people do. And that's what the successful people did, is they got there early, stayed late, and gave it 100%. They volunteered for everything. I volunteered for everything. I reclassed 3 times. I was the PP guy. I did all the piss tests. Whatever you asked me to do, I did, because I wanted to become the ultimate soldier. But then after my training accident, you know, you can't see, you can't shoot. So, and they tell me, you're no longer Sergeant Kaufman. Well, wait a minute. If I'm not Sergeant Kaufman, who am I? Who is Richard? And I think a lot of veterans struggle with that. Once we hang up the uniform for the last time, who are we? You know, we're no longer sergeants, so-and-so, or major, or colonel. Who's Richard? You know what I mean? And for me, that was the hardest thing to deal with, was trying to figure out, all right, you know, what do I do now? I'm not that guy that was in the military for 23 years. You know, I'm a PFC. I'm a private friggin' civilian now. And what do I do? And that scared just crap out of me. And that's why I decided to end my life on Labor Day 2012.
So what happened with the training accident? Obviously, you mentioned traumatic brain injury and loss of vision. Take us back to what were the events that led to that, if you're comfortable sharing that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We were heading down to Fort Dix, and I was a convoy commander, and one of our vehicles broke down. So there was a new private driving the new Humvees, up armored Humvees. And I was using hand and arm signals to back him up. And instead of him hitting the brakes, he hit the gas, ran over the whole right side of my body and ran over my head. So I had an ocular stroke, which caused me to lose blindness in my eyes. So that's what happened with that. And back then I was on some stuff I can't really talk about. I was pretty jacked and yoked. So I just got up and I shook it off until we got down into Fort Dix, and pretty soon everything went black and I couldn't see anything. So that's when my whole life turned to crap, was that day. And the funny thing is, I never told anybody what happened, because I didn't want to get to, because I knew that his kid was a young private. I didn't want to ruin his military career because of a mistake he would have made. So I never told anybody that. I didn't tell the commanders anything. I never told them the truth, because I didn't want to get this kid in trouble, because I knew at one point I was that young kid. But eventually he got put out for drugs anyway. But for me, it was kind of, I don't know, it was like apropos, I guess. And that's when my whole world just spiraled down from being the ultimate soldier, from being the guy that would max out the PT tests. I maxed out every correspondence courses. I mean, I would be the man every time he went to formation. I was it. And then to go from that and not even be able to use the bathroom because I can't see, it was a total life-changing experience.
So talk to us a little bit more about how you dealt with that experience, because I think this is something that isn't necessarily talked about enough. When someone experiences a massive physical change. For me, for example, I got Bell's palsy after I got out of the military. That was a massive physical change of my face that was really hard to deal with. There's people that lose limbs in the military, it's almost a whole identity shift, because you're almost a completely different person, because you have to learn how to deal with losing a limb, losing loss of vision, losing a function of your body. And obviously most people aren't going to handle that lightly. And you talked about how you went to end your life. And was it because of this specific event, or was it the separation from the military, everything combined? What led to that? And how did you handle this massive physical change that you now had to deal with?
I didn't handle it very well. I got to say, I always say that my wife is my best friend. She's my bride. She's my everything. She's my rock. She got my blind side, literally. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here today. But I didn't handle it too well, because I didn't know how to handle it. Because I was, my whole life for the next, 23 years was doing the right thing. It was, at one point I moved to New Jersey, but I still had to go to drill in South Carolina. So I would drive 13 hours on Friday to make the drill and drive 13 hours back on Sunday night. And I never missed the drill once. And I was always early. So for me to go from that to having to have my wife take my hand to take me to the bathroom, I realized that I had God humbled me. And he said, listen, if you're not going to humble yourself, I'm going to humble you. And it was at that moment that I realized, okay, I have to learn to be able to be loved. I have to learn to be able to be taken care of. And that's, it really humbled me. And it still humbles me today, because no matter, number one, podcasts and books and speaking, I still can't drive at night, because I have night blindness. I can't drive my daughter to school at certain times. So, I still deal with a lot of stuff. But in my experience, the first podcast, one of the first podcast guests I ever had, and is a gentleman that he's blind and deaf, and he ran the Badwater 135 in the Mojave Desert almost the same time as David Goggins did. So if Adam can do that, what am I going to complain about if I have a little bit of vision problem? So, and that's why I started the podcast, to be like, okay, the guy, first guy I ever had on the show, he had his both arms, both legs were blown off, and I'm on the phone with him. His wife's holding up his phone. He's in a jacuzzi in Aspen skiing with his family. And that's when I said, all right, no matter what I have, if I go totally blind, I still have two arms. I still got two legs. I'm still going to make the best of it. So, that's when my thoughts started to change. Be like, okay, what's worst case scenario? Okay, I lose all my vision. Okay, now I can learn. I learn how to play guitar. I learn how to podcast, So for me, it's kind of like, a lot of people will complain, oh, well, why did this happen to me? Well, me, and I'm like, well, why not this happen to me? Why am I that special that bad things aren't going to happen? Like with you and your Bell's palsy. Okay, a lot of people would say, oh, I'm going to give it up because I'm not going to look good on TikTok. I'm not going to have that. But you turned your mess into your message. Mm-hmm. And now you're a superhero. If you become a superhero because you've dealt with this, and you're going past where people that are able are not able to do.
Yeah.
That's why I call, I don't have a disability. I have a visibility. Because even though I can't see so great, my hearing is much better. Mm. You know what I mean? So I flip everything that's wrong. I flip it to the positives.
I love that. It truly is all about mindset. And I actually talked about this with one of my last guests on a recent episode, about how it really is just about how we look at things, because you see people out there in some of the quote unquote worst situations that have this incredible mindset surrounding it. And it really is just about what our perspective is on how we're going to handle things and how we truly come back from that. So I love that you are the comeback coach, and I have gotten so much value from listening to the episodes of your podcast. And we'll get into talking about more about your podcast here towards the end of the episode, because I definitely want to give you a chance to plug that. But talk to us a little bit more about, you know, you just said all these things about how you were able to shift your mindset around to see the positives and look past a lot of the negatives in your situation. But you at one point attempted to take your life. And you said that your 6-month-old daughter is who saved your life from suicide. So talk to us about that situation. What happened there?
All right. It all goes back to, and if I get a little emotional, I'm sorry. It all goes back to Labor Day, 2012. I knew I was going to get med boarded. I knew they were going to put me out, but I didn't know when. Then they called me in the office and said, we need your ID. And Sergeant Kaufman, you're no longer a member of the United States military. And when they took my ID from my hand, because we know whenever we got pulled over or if we ever needed ID, it was always our military ID. We never used our driver's license. It was always, so who was I? Now I don't have that anymore. And I knew when I got home, I was going to hang up that uniform for the last time. It was going to go in a closet and I'm never going to wear it again. So I felt like I failed my wife. I failed my country. I failed myself. And I was like, you know what? I'm still on orders for the next, you know, for the rest of the weekend. So if I die, my wife gets $100,000 or whatever it is, you know, she'll be taken care of. And my baby, because I had a brand new 6-month-old daughter, I have 2 sons. And I figured if I die today, while on orders, they'll be taken care of. So I decided bought a brand new Dodge Ram 1500. So I figured I'm going to call my wife because I'm never going to see her. And I knew when I called my wife, I was never going to hear her voice ever again. I knew it was a wrap. It was over. But I didn't want to let her know. And I just let her know I love her, tell the kids that I love her, because we were supposed to meet at the shore for a weekend. So my plan was, now, guys, you know, like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. So my plan was to get in the truck, hit 100 miles an hour, put it on cruise control. And here in New Jersey, all the highways are all concrete, so you're going to hit something. So my plan was just to get in cruise control, put it on cruise, hit 100 miles an hour, shut my eyes, and just run off the road. So I did get up to 100 miles an hour. I put it on cruise control, turned the radio on. Now, I don't listen to country. I was an 80s hip hop guy. I'm used to listening to, you know, NWA, Dre, Snoop. But at this time, a country radio station came on. And I was like, all right, whatever. I'm dying anyway, so it doesn't matter what I'm listening to. And I closed my eyes. And, you know, on the highways, on the side of the roads, they have those little things that click, 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 when you know you're about to go off. And I kept hearing click, click, click. So I knew that I'm seconds away from hitting the barrier. And a song called I Saw God Today by George Strait came on. And it talks about a man that's looking at his newborn baby daughter from the glass of the hospital and how much he loves her and how much he loves being a father. And it hit me. I'm like, I got a choice to make. I can either become a statistic or I can be a father and a husband. So I turned the wheel real quick and I turned off on the side of the road and I called my wife. I told her what happened. She was pissed off, obviously. But she said, you know, we're going to get you help. I said, because honey, I said, if I don't get help, I know I'm probably going to eat my gun by Monday. It's going to be over. She said, don't worry about it, honey. I got you. And we set an appointment to see my therapist. And I've been seeing the same therapist for 11 years now. That's why I wear this t-shirt. It says, today I decide. You know, I decided to become a husband and a father instead of a statistic. And it was all like you talk about is we all have decisions to make. We can either decide how our book ends or we can let somebody else write our book. And that's to say, I decided, okay, I'm going to write my book. I'm not going to let the military decide what my ending is going to be. So that's how my little baby daughter, she's upstairs now having fun, but she saved my life and she doesn't really know about it until she gets a little bit older.
That's a beautiful story. What was it that kept you from falling back into addiction after that process?
I think it was somebody else out there is going through this. And if I'm able to be there for them, to let them know if this guy can do it, anybody can do it. And sometimes I get down, you know, even I have whatever I have, you know, and it's not money at all, but it's, you know, it's a lot of people say, oh, you know, you got a top podcast. I'm like, yeah, but some days I'm not feeling it. Sometimes I don't feel like getting out of bed some days, but that's when I'll go on my Facebook and be like, guys, I'm struggling today. And I'll get a bunch of messages, but people know I'm just like them. I'm nobody special, but I'm just here to say, okay, well, if you're struggling and I'm struggling, let's struggle together. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the things that stood out the most to me about you when I first met you is that you're this guy with this extensive network, you know, a lot of really who are considered very powerful and very prominent people. I mean, you mentioned Ed Milet, Gary Vaynerchuk, but you don't use that to inflate your sense of self. And I never got the sense that you do that. Your goal in life is just to give value to other people. And I respect that. And I think
no matter how big we get, like, yeah, you know, I live in a $500,000 home. I got a beautiful wife, three cars, three beautiful children, but I still got to go out and pick up a 14-pound dog's crap in the morning. I'm not that cool. I'm not that important.
Oh, well, let's talk a little bit about the shift. What sounds like the second major shift in your life, where you shifted from this mindset of Richard as a member of the military and your identity as a sergeant to kind of what you're doing more today, this shift of, you know, podcasting and book writing. And I know you mentioned Gary Vee had a huge, huge role in that. So how did you meet Gary Vee? Was he, I'm assuming he wasn't as big when you met him as he is now, or maybe he was.
That's what he was at the very height of where he was at. But now the way I met him, I don't recommend anybody doing this, but I was with GNC for over 30 years. And I was a manager, district manager, GNC. So I called, his father has a liquor store 20 minutes from my house. And I called him. I'm like, you know, this is Rich from GNC. I'm supposed to have a meeting with Gary. I forget when he's going to be there. Can you let me know when he's going to be there? And he's like, yeah, he's going to be here this Saturday, blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right, just let him know that I'm going to come and see him. So I got in to see him, and I just started BSing with him. And he actually, in his early videos, you can actually see my Wounded Warrior hat actually hanging up in his office. But that was the way I got to get in with him. But then, you know, once he realized that I'm just a Jersey boy, you know, and we kind of had that kind of bond. And then I told him, I said, Gary, you saved my life. You and Ed Milet, you saved my life and gave me direction. And I told him, I said, Gary, you know, I'll promote you for the rest of my life. And I do. Whenever his new books come out, I actually buy it and I'll actually post a link about it I'll give a synopsis of the whole book, not expecting anything, but because he poured into me. And when people pour into me, that just means I want to pour into others. So that's my Gary Vee story. And him and Ed Milet are people that, you know, have poured into me, and I'm still learning every day. Even though I have 1,100 podcast episodes, I'm still a baby and I'm still learning. So if it wasn't for Gary or Ed, I wouldn't be where I am, and I'm nowhere in their league, but I just want to say without them, I wouldn't be where I am today.
That's incredible. And so you started this podcast. When you started the podcast, were you planning on doing anything like that? Or was it just that you got advice and then you just kind of went for it, and then your direction kind of shifted as you went?
I'm the worst podcaster ever. What happened was, like, I was with GNC and I started this little podcast. It was called Success Your Why Powers Your How. And all I would do is I would try new products. And I'd be like, yeah, this pre-workout tasted great. It didn't work. Or I'd be like, you know, guys, this pre-workout tastes like ass. I'm like, but it's awesome. It kicks ass. You should try it out. But then I started interviewing folks like that gentleman I was telling you about. But I got 300 episodes in, and I never realized that my podcast was never even on iTunes.
Just
300 episodes in. 300 episodes in. And then I talked to the guys at iTunes. I'm like, I like to put my 300 episodes on. They're like, yeah, no. So I had to start a whole new podcast from scratch. And it was just audio at the time. And now it's video and all that. But I'm the worst podcaster in the world. And I listened to my podcast that I did before. And I was like, I hear a lot of ums, a lot of ahs. I'm like, that's horrible. So guys, I'm the worst podcaster you're ever going to meet.
Hey, we all start somewhere. We all start somewhere. So when we talk about this incredible network of connections that you have built, are you just organically going out and meeting people and networking and putting yourself out there, or what? I guess to shift this into what would be relevant to people listening, how do you recommend that someone that is leaving the military and maybe is experiencing a tough situation and having that identity shift and trying to figure out what's next, how would you recommend that they step into that next step of maybe networking, meeting more people, or just figuring out what's next?
You have to realize what gets you going, what gets you excited. But then you also have to, because I heard Gary, he was on an episode once. He's like, I forget, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago. He's like, you need to jump on LinkedIn. So as soon as he said that, I jumped on LinkedIn. And I think we're up to like 30,000 connections on LinkedIn. But it's all about creating value. Now, when I started my second podcast, I really didn't know a lot of top-level people. So what I would do is, like, I seen the authors of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Sharon Lecter. She put out a new book with a guy named Greg Reed. So what I did is I bought the book, I listened to it, I studied it, and then I promoted it on all my platforms with a link for them to buy, for people to buy it. And then I tagged them in the post. So what I did is just, I said, okay, Sharon, Greg, I love your book. I love what you guys are doing. And they seen me promoting their books. Their sales went up. And then I said, hey, Greg, Sharon, I'd love to have you guys to come on the show to talk about your book. They're not going to tell me no, because I'm promoting it for free. Even if they would say no, I got something out of the book, but still I'm providing more value than I ever give. And for me, I think that's one of the reasons I'm a little bit successful, is because I always try to provide more value than I ever get. And I think if you're going to be successful in whatever you do, make sure if you have customers, under promise, over deliver. Make sure that, like, if you come on my podcast, I'm going to tell you, yeah, I'm going to put your episode on 12 platforms. I actually put it on 24 different platforms. And then when you're getting tagged everywhere and you're getting like 10 or 15 tags in 10 minutes, you're like, what the hell? He just said he's going to tag. He didn't say he was going to tag me on TikTok, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Tumblr, Flickr. So for me, it's kind of just, if somebody's going to give you time, make sure you always over deliver it. And I think you'll be successful whatever you choose to do. But like I tell my daughter, my 11-year-old, I'm like, if you want to be an artist, I just want you to be the best artist there is. I don't care, you know, if that's what you want to do, as long as you want to be the best at it, make sure you become the best at it, and make sure you find the right mentors. You know, like for me, Gary, Ed Milet, Jordan Harbinger, Tim Ferriss, those are my mentors. Those are people that, you know, John Lee Dumas, those are the guys that I want to be like. And, you know, there's a lot of podcasters that I'm equal with or a little bit above. You know, I really don't watch what they do because they can't get me where I want to be. And I think a lot of people, when they start out in business, they only watch what the people that are close to them are doing. They don't look at who the best is. You know, if you're going to be the best professional wrestler, you want to look at The Rock. You know, what is The Rock doing? You know what I mean? Instead of just looking at somebody just a little bit better than you or a little bit below you. I don't know. I don't know how that answer is, but I think that's how I feel about those things.
No, that's a great answer. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because I think the military, I can't say the military itself promotes this. Maybe it does slightly, but the culture in the military would probably be the most appropriate thing to say. Promotes this attitude of show up, do your bare minimum, and go home. And a lot of people do that. Now, I can't say everyone does, because I met some phenomenal people in the military who did go above and beyond, and you could see the fruits of their labor from going above and beyond. But a lot of people have this mindset of 20 years, 5 years, 10 years, however long they spend in that environment, of just doing the bare minimum. And so forget, or maybe never learned in the first place, that giving more and not expecting something, or just giving value because you want to make someone else's life better, it reciprocates. It's that the law of reciprocation, right? And it's such a simple thing to do, but so many people out there aren't doing it. And so I'm so glad that you brought that point up, because I think if people implement that, there's so much value jam-packed in that. And that's how you get in the spaces with the people that you want to get in spaces with, without necessarily having to go buy a $3,000 ticket to a conference to watch them speak, where you don't get to necessarily meet them. You provide value in their life. And
but think about, because that's something I wanted to talk about, because a lot of people, I had the opportunity to get backstage with Richard Branson. But the way it happened was because I knew somebody that was working the event, and I actually interviewed four of the six people that were on the event. But I said, you know what? What can I do to serve you? Let me go and set up chairs. Let me take out the garbage. So I'm getting the same information you paid $5,000 for. I'm getting the same information, and I get to provide value to them. And of course, if I'm picking up their garbage, and if I'm doing this or doing chairs, I'm sure if I see them, I'm like, Richard, you know, can I talk to you for a second? They're pretty much not going to say no, because you're volunteer without pay to go do something for them. So that's a great way to get into rooms. If you can't afford to get in rooms, volunteer. Like, I couldn't afford to get in front of David Meltzer, who's got a $20 billion company. I can't afford to buy his hour of time, but I can have him come on my show for an hour, and I can ask him whatever I want, but because I'm providing value for him. So I think the more value you provide, the more people are going to pour into you too.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. Can you talk to us about how long the people hear these things, and in their mind, maybe they know it's not an overnight thing, but I think a lot of people kind of quantify things in short timelines. Now, you've been podcasting for a while, but when we talk about how long it took you to really build yourself up to the point you are today, how long did that take you? Or how long has it taken so far?
Well, probably about 8 years, because I first started doing Facebook Lives when they first started. That's when you get a lot of people that would watch. So I started doing Facebook Lives, and then I went to podcasting. So it's taken me a good 8 years, and we finally hit, I think, 1.5 million downloads or something like that. But it's only been the last year that it's really grown, because it's when somebody said to me, you're the best at what you do. Mm-hmm. Believe in yourself. Make sure that your people know that you are who you are, and also start pouring into other people. Like, I'm on like five different podcasts a week now. And I realize I'm only going to get more popular if I go on more people's shows and provide more value to more people.
Right.
You know, and I think a podcast is, I'm afraid to go on other people. Why? We're all in this together. Like, why would I be afraid to have you on my show if you're a podcaster? Right. We're all in this together.
Right. Right.
You know, but I think if we have that mindset that there's 8 billion people in this world, you know, so everybody has their own space. But when I have you on my show, you're able to touch people that won't listen to me.
Right.
And I might be able to touch people that don't listen to you as much. So I think it's, you know, as long as we all work in the same ecosystem, you know, because like a lot of people, I think they have that mindset of there's not enough. Well, I live in the enough world, where there's enough of everything. And I think the more that we give and the more that we realize there's enough for everybody, so let's just provide value for everybody, you can't lose.
I love that. That attitude of collaboration over competition, which is another thing that I want to make this point, that a lot of people in the military space don't quite understand that fully, of that collaboration over competition. And so if you're listening and you're active duty or you've separated from the military and your mindset isn't quite where you want it to be yet, know that that is okay. That, you know, Richard just talked about 8 years is how long it's taken to build up. And I think even for me, myself, I've been podcasting 2 years now, and oftentimes I'll look back and I'll get down on myself. I'm only here. I'm not where I want to be yet. I'm not blown up, but I compare where I started to where I am now. And then, you know, thinking if I consistently do this for another 6 years, what is life going to look like then? And I think that's such an important thing for people to understand, is that sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but moving and making some kind of progress is better than sulking in our feelings. And you hit earlier on this concept of taking full responsibility for everything. I'd like to go back to that a little bit, because that is such an important thing that I really want to drive into the listeners, is this idea of taking radical responsibility. Talk to us about that mindset shift, and how easy or difficult was it for you to shift your mindset into that? And I believe you said this earlier, so apologize if this is double asking, but what was it that made you shift your mindset into this radical responsibility? I think you said it was Ed Milet.
Actually, it was Grant Cardone. Now, I was actually driving Uber because I was trying to make extra money to fund the podcast. And I got his book. Now, I don't care if you like Grant. If you do like Grant, I don't care. But I hated Grant Cardone until I read it. I heard an interview with him and Ed Milet. And then he talked about how when he was 20 years old, he was a crackhead. He was an addict. And he quit drugs and became addicted to success. And that's when I realized, I can understand where he's at now. But something, I loved his book, but something that he said in the book, he said, once you realize that from this point on, whatever happens in your life, whether you fail or succeed, it's all your fault. So once you take ownership from this point on, from hearing these words from our lips, everything that goes on from your life from this point on is your fault. It may not, you know, something may happen to you, but how you react, that's your fault. So once you take ownership of everything in your life from this, if my wife's not happy, if my kids aren't happy, if the bills aren't paid, I take full responsibility. It's on me. And like I tell all my, because I just started a coaching program Monday. I tell all my clients, listen, guys, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody. The only person that can save you is you. I mean, I can be a guide. We can be guides. But I can't do the work for you. But if you're willing to do the work, you can come out of any situation that you're in. But you got to be, like even the Bible, it says, you got to do your company's inventory, or else you're going to go out of business. So if you don't know your weak points, your strong points, then you're just going to continue fail, unless you're brutally honest and say, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I'm ready to change. So it's all about brutal honesty, and not everybody can be brutally honest.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's something that a lot of people in society struggle with, brutally honest with other people, much less ourselves, because I've even noticed with myself lately that the idea, and I took this leadership assessment recently, and the person that I thought I was in my head compared to the person that I actually am when I was radically honest with myself on the assessment, two different people. And I was like, holy shit, like this isn't matching. And maybe this is why things aren't working the way I want them to, because I have two different ideas going on in my head. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to touch on this radical honesty thing, is because I think that's one of those things that people kind of need to hear over and over and over, because sometimes we forget that we fall back into this person that maybe this is the idea of who we want to be and who we think we are, but we're not quite in alignment with it because we aren't being fully honest with ourselves. So
somebody told me, and I wish I could remember, but they said, you are who you are when you're alone. That's the real person. You know, if the camera's on, you're probably somebody different. But when you're home alone and there's nobody around you and whatever thoughts you have, that's the real person. So you have to decide, okay, I don't want to be that person anymore. I don't like that old person. I want to change. It's going to take time, but you have to say, you know what? Even in the Bible, you know, it says that you have to put the old man to death to create the new one.
Yeah.
But you have to know who the old man is before you can create something new.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it truly is a process, and it's a beautiful process. It's a hard process, but taking one step at a time, I think, is where I really struggled to wrap my head around things, is that slow process, because we live in this world of instant gratification. So Richard, you talked about you're doing coaching now. So talk to us a little bit more about that. And then also, if you could talk to us about your book and your podcast, so that people know what it is that you have to offer and how they can get value from you, and also how they can support you.
Okay. Well, before we even start, I want to offer something special to your listener base. If you get in touch with our gracious host, or you get in touch with me, my book, I'll send it to you for free. You just have to just say, hey, you know, here's my email, send it to me. I'll send you my book for free. No cost, no charge, nothing at all. And then also, if you decide to get the book, 30-minute coaching call for free, no cost, just because your friends are hers, your friends are mine. So I want to help you out. So I don't want anything from you. I just want to improve your life. But I do have a coaching program I just started, because as soon as I hit 1 million downloads, everybody and her mother started saying, how'd you do it? You know, how'd you get 1 million downloads? How did you get, you know, David Meltzer, John Lee, how do you get all these people on the show? And how do you monetize your show? So that's when I said, you know what, I'm going to create a course, an 8-week course where you can work directly with me, to where I'll actually coach you. Because I call it the 3 P's of podcasting: purpose, power, and also, because why start a business if you're not going to make a profit from it? So I teach people the 3 P's of podcasting. So, and I'll take you from starting it to monetizing it and to running it in 8 weeks. And you actually get to work with me. And it's through Zoom, it's through phone calls, whatever's best for you. And what I do is because a lot of people say, you know, I don't want to invest in a course. And I'm like, yeah, but I've done the work. You know, I've spent over $50,000 in courses from John Lee Dumas, Eric Allen, Sean Douglas, Ed Milet, Gary Vee. So these people that I've paid thousands and thousands of dollars to learn from, and I'm willing to teach you how to do it. And you don't, and I'm making sure that you don't have to go through the same potholes that I went through. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I'll take you to where you want to be. And then what I started doing, which is totally different, I've never heard anybody do it, that once your podcast goes live, I'm actually going to run Facebook ads for your podcast to go right to you. Have nothing to do with me, but I'm going to set up the Facebook ads so you're getting all the downloads and has nothing to do with me.
That's valuable in itself right there. Facebook ads get expensive.
Yeah. So that's why, and I just started. I have 5 clients now. I have 5 slots. I've got 1 slot available. So if anybody's interested, you know, just hit me up and I'll talk to you about it. And if I get on the phone with you and you're like, you know what, I'm not interested, that's great. We could be friends, right? Then it's worth it. Because then I'll just have another friend. So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And your book, tell us more about your book.
Well, the book is, because Gary Vee, when I was about to leave, I said, Gary, what do you want me to do next? I'm the kind of guy, you give me an SOP, I'll do it. Military taught me, do an SOP, follow the directions. And he said, I want you to go home and watch the movie 8 Mile. I'm like, what? It was when the movie 8 Mile came out with Eminem. I'm like, okay. He's like, just watch the last 2 minutes and call me back. I watched the last 2 minutes. I'm like, Gary, I don't get it. I don't understand. He said, I want you to write all the dirty shit you've ever done, and I want you to put it out in a book. and I want you to publish it. And I'm like, but why? He's like, because then nobody can ever throw dirt at you again if you already put it all out there already. Mm. You know, somebody might say, you know, Rich, you were a drug addict. Yeah, but now I'm clean 35 years. You know, Rich, you lived in a crack house. Yeah, but I own my own house. Rich, you've been divorced twice. Yeah, but I got a beautiful bride and three beautiful children now. So now you can't talk trash about me because I already told you everything bad about me. And so and then I said, okay. He said, I want you to publish the book. So I published a book. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. The last two chapters, it's my story, but at the end of each chapter, it gives you life lessons on what not to do. And then the last two chapters are, what does depression look like? It's not what you think it looks like. And then the last chapter is, what is addiction and what does addiction look like? It's not what you think it looks like. So it's also a teaching book. But the best part is I make $0 off every book I sell. Every t-shirt, I have my own coffee. I got Vertical Momentum Coffee. T-shirts, hats, coffee, books, 100% of the proceeds go to help veterans struggling with PTSD and homelessness. So I don't make any money off anything that I do because I'm more worried about something like Gary said. I said, Gary, give me a nugget before I leave here. He says, your legacy will always be more valuable than your currency. And so now everything I do is for legacy. And if you're doing stuff for the good of people, you can't help but be successful. You know, even Zig Ziglar said, you can have anything you want in this world as long as you help enough people get what they want. So for me, that's my whole thing, is to make sure that there's not a veteran or a first responder that is going to take their life today. So that's my goal every day, is to make sure that I'm here so to let somebody know it's okay not to be okay. And guys, if you're listening to this, you're struggling, hang up this phone right now, dial 988. You can get help right now. And it's this way you don't have to go through the holidays being depressed and suicidal.
That's beautiful. In your podcast, we talked about it a little bit, but I don't know if we actually shared the name of the podcast. So if you want to talk a little bit more and let everyone know where they can
I just got my new beanie. It just came in today.
I love it.
It says Vertical Momentum. And I did not come up with it. The name, my friend Daniel Faust came out with the name. And what it means is just, you know, the only way to go is up. So why not have that momentum? Because once you start getting a little bit of momentum in whatever you're doing, it's just going to keep going. So that's how the name came out, with Vertical Momentum. It's on all your podcasts. It's on, I think, 32 different channels that it's on right now. So you could find, we're on actually on the first 8 pages of Google. If you just put in Vertical Momentum, you're going to see the podcast everywhere. Wow. So
that's incredible.
I'm about to drop an episode as soon as we get off with my friend Eddie White. He's a 28-year veteran. He's going to teach you how to be a better father, a better husband, and a better mate, and how to raise children while being deployed and also while coming home. So that's coming out probably in about an hour.
Super, super valuable. We're recording this about mid-December right now. So by the time this episode drops, that'll already be out. Plus, I'm sure lots more valuable episodes. And honestly, it doesn't matter what kind of advice you need in life. I promise you can find something on Richard's podcast that is going to apply to your life. And if it doesn't apply to your life now, it's probably going to apply to you in the future, or the person that you want to be. And honestly, jam-packed full of so much value, Richard. I appreciate so much what you put out into the world, because you truly are fulfilling what you want to fulfill, building that incredible legacy. Because there's a difference between just having a history versus building an incredible legacy. And I think you're doing just that. So please continue doing what you're doing. Don't stop. You're helping so many people. To end the episode today, first of all, before we get into the very last question, what is the best way that people can follow you, support you, or check out what you're doing? Website, social media?
All you got to do is go to Google, just type in Vertical Momentum Podcast. We're on so many different platforms. We're everywhere. So
perfect. Just
the first 8 pages of Google, if you type in Vertical Momentum, you'll find my ugly face somewhere.
All right, Richard, last thing for you today. Are there any last words or pieces of advice that you want to leave the listeners with?
Yes. The way I end my podcast every time is that I love Joel Osteen. I don't care what people say. But one of the things he talks about, and people that know me, my theory is you have a choice today. You can be a victim or you can be a victor. So we have the choice. Today I decide to get to be the victim or the victor. And if you're listening to your podcast, they decide to be victors and no longer playing the victim game.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.